Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Of course, the Ravens facing the Bucs on Monday night, and joining us to talk about the Bucs, tell us all about their personnel and scheme, is John Ledyard. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. I'm excited to be with you, and I'm really excited to talk about this matchup because we're clearly talking about two of the most potent offenses in the NFL and two defenses that are typically in that range in terms of how people think about them, but are really still finding their way this season. So it should be a really exciting game and one that is really exciting to preview as well.
Looking forward to it absolutely on Monday night. And these are two great offensive clubs. Let's talk a little bit briefly about the Bucs offseason this year in terms of either free agent acquisitions or the draft. What were the biggest moves they made?
Yeah, most of the time for the Bucs, it has been, for the last couple of years at least, about retaining their talent. They really loved the team that they built that won the Super Bowl. They felt like the next year after that, that if not for injuries, they probably would have been in the game again. And honestly, there's not much to disprove that. They've done a great job of adding talent. So the Bucs have been mostly status quo as a roster, other than obviously Brady retiring and bringing in Baker Mayfield. That's really been the big change. Other than that, it's been keep your guys, draft, keep your draft picks, make sure you hit on your picks, and build and develop from there. And that's been their philosophy. They add a little bit around the margins in free agency, but not too much. And so a lot of it was re-signing their own players. They actually spent some of the most money this past offseason in total guarantees of any team, but nobody talked about them as big free agent winners for the most part because they were just retaining their own really good players. And that was kind of how they went about it. It wasn't a lot of new outside acquisitions. So they've managed the cap really well. They've got a pretty good roster, I think, really talented. They've rebuilt the offensive line, which has been the top priority, I think. And they've continued to try to add difference makers in the defensive line, some of which have hit, some of which haven't. And I think if that part of it had been a little bit better, we probably would be talking about their defense a tier up from where it is. But that's probably, as a roster, kind of the big thing that's a question for them moving forward. Can they find that great edge player, that even a Shaq Barrett replication, you know, can they do something like that again? Don't have anybody right now who can fill that role, even if their players are solid. But across the rest of the team, you don't see a lot of positional weaknesses outside of maybe linebacker and the corner position when they're not healthy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, certainly known for defensive line, still got some great interior guys there. Right, in Tampa. We'll get to that a little bit later. Cap situation for 2025, how are they looking?
They're looking actually pretty good. I'll pull up the exact numbers. But I think the one thing about the Bucs is that even though they've spent money in general, they don't really have like a lot of damaging contracts down the road for them. And so that's going to be the one thing I think everybody is sort of like, oh, well, how can they keep doing this and bringing back their team? But for 2025, I mean, it depends obviously on who they bring back. Godwin will be a free agent. And so whether he comes back will be a big question mark, but they're a team that's going to be, you know, so on the lower half of the league, probably in cap space. Now there's always, you can move off of some players, you know, they're probably, I would guess that at the end of the year, they would look at potentially trading Jamel Dean. They did that with Carlton Davis this past year. They felt like just the injuries had piled up and that his best ball was maybe behind him. And he's still a helpful player, but he's already gone down probably four times this season in games, just gets banged up a lot. And I think they'll see Dean pretty similarly. It's just a matter of whether they feel like they've got players ready to replace them, or they're in position to replace them. So the cap right now, it's like toward the lower third of the league in terms of how much space they'll have. I think about 28 million, but those numbers are so fluid, as you know, at this point in time. Like once you get into the offseason, that can be added to very easily and can be subtracted from very easily and very quickly as well.
And you mentioned they didn't have a lot of damaging contracts. They have a lot of restructurable dollars available that would allow them to increase that amount. So I see they're at 17.7 effective. I see the $28 million yep. number you're quoting as well. Sometimes teams get themselves, and you look at the Browns, for instance, cap space, they don't have anybody that they can restructure. The 2025 right. contracts are all down at the vet minimum. Tampa's got a better situation than that.
Better situation than that. They have restructured some guys already, though. I'm trying to think of, I'm not sure who's available or who they could potentially still restructure moving forward within the guidelines of the CBA. But that has been a route that they've gone to many times in the past is restructures. The other route they could go still is, and I think there's some restructures just based on the guys that they just re-signed. They could restructure them again after year if they wanted to. The other route that I think that they might be interested in going is, like I said, either you send out some money at the end of the year, or perhaps you actually like cut a player. That's an option too, because there are some players like that that could be available for that, depending on what the rest of the situations are with those position groups. And so they'll probably be a pretty similar team next year, I think. My guess is the way Godwin's played this year and the fact that this is probably, I would say, as much as any organization in the league, the most loyal organization to their players. If a player has done well for this organization, they generally try to keep that player. There obviously are some past injuries with Godwin, his age, and just what you're paying for wide receivers is somewhat of a question mark, but that will be the big offseason decision. I think the rest of the roster, I feel like probably won't be as big of a decision, and I bet it'll be a pretty similar looking team next year.
Okay, terrific. Let's move on. A very familiar name behind center here in Baker Mayfield. Is there a difference in his game that you would highlight from his time with the Browns? Obviously, he was known kind of at that time as kind of the phrase that Collinsworth coined about him was talking about him throwing fadeaway jumpers. It looks like watching some of his passes this year, he's a more confident passer in terms of moving around and throwing the ball and stepping through his throw.
Yeah, the biggest difference is confidence, probably, which has been said a lot in mainstream media, but I don't think it's unpacked often, like what that actually means. I think it comes out mostly in decision making. You know, Baker is always going to live a little bit on the edge, not erratic for sure, but he'll live a little on the edge, and things can certainly still have those unravel points for him. But his ability to bounce back, even when he's had a rough game, you know, if you watch the game against Denver in the first half, you were like, this guy, you can't win with this guy. Like, it was like he forgot how to play the position. Then he bounces back and has had several great games in a row since then. And so he really has been, that's the biggest thing, the ability to get back on track when he has a bad moment or sequence. We'd all like to have Patrick Mahomes, you know, as quarterback of our franchise, I think. But the reality is that we're not mostly getting Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen's and Lamar Jackson's and Joe Burrow's. Most teams are getting players who are talented at the position, but flawed and or have some weak point in some area. And it's building around that. And I think really for Baker, in Baker's situation especially, making sure his strengths are amplified has been a big deal. So his ability to drive the ball to all areas of the field, like he has elite velocity on the football. That has always been true of him, I believe. He can throw the ball with a ton of zip. So his confidence is huge in that he feels like he has the ability and to make all of those throws. So Baker, for a while, would avoid the middle of the field, and the Bucs leaned on that last year and didn't ask him to win there a whole lot. This year, a lot more of his passing to the middle of the field. They have really kind of bumped him up another level as a quarterback as a result of that. So the two biggest things I would say that are different from his time in Cleveland are that ability to throw to the middle of the field without making tons of mistakes. In the past, that was just like a minefield for him throwing in that area. That has been still, I mean, most interceptions occur between the numbers, and he's no exception to that, but that has been much better, much cleaner part of his game. Throwing into tight windows in those areas of the field with accuracy, I think, is huge and unlocks this offense, because we know they have the elements outside the numbers, especially with the run after catch that they create outside the numbers. I think they're number one in the NFL in yards after the catch and number one in yards after contact too with the ball in their hands, I believe. So those areas of the offense are going to be strengths sort of no matter what, as long as Baker can just play like a normal quarterback would. But the fact that he unlocks the middle of the field, I think, is key. And then the escapability is probably the other thing. You know, for a long time, especially when Baker was in college, even, he was a quarterback that would invite chaos, and it was just a matter of the adventure of whether he would be able to get out of it or not. And in college, he mostly did when he played that way. And in the NFL, he couldn't. And that was a big deal in Cleveland. He couldn't. His style of play wasn't conducive to consistent quarterbacking, because he'd constantly be creating negatives for himself and his offense, because he would try to play like Lamar Jackson, and he wasn't that caliber of an athlete. He's a solid athlete for sure, but he isn't that caliber of an athlete. So the biggest thing for him now is he he cuts down on those plays more often. And when he does pick and choose his moments, he's been way more effective. I didn't think that would be sustainable, Ken, at the beginning of last year. That was actually a thing that concerned me. Now that he's sustained it for a year and almost a half as a quarterback, where that has consistently been a strength of his game, and even better this year, I'm actually ready to believe that he really can play that way. He just can't build the whole plane out of that. And that's where he, when he can temper it, I think it really can be an effective part of the offense, because he's not the kind of quarterback that will ever get spied. And so that gives them another layer to their offense, I think, with his legs.
So he's playing his second year in Tampa now. His first year in Tampa, much was made of him being the quarterback that had the right price tag, a guy that could get into to come in to replace Brady in a year where they had to eat a lot of dead money on the end of Brady's contract. I guess there might've been other contracts as well, but I think it was a lot of it was Brady, and was really at the right price. And then it turned out to be quite the bargain. What's his current contract is about what?
I think it's like $33 million, if I'm remembering right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he's ended up being quite the bargain for the Bucs coming in. A little surprising to AFC North fans, I can tell you that from the past. But good luck to him. Take us through the offensive line currently, from left to right, if you would, in terms of who's playing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tristan Wirfs, one of the best left tackles in all of football. One of the hardest players to beat, probably. When you're just talking about pass protection, I would say like it's he and Laremy Tunsil and Trent Williams amongst all tackles. Lane Johnson, if he's healthy, amongst all tackles in a conversation, probably by themselves, that are probably those guys. Just in the pass protection part, Penei Sewell is amazing and probably the best run blocker, and he's really good in pass protection. But I would say Wirfs is probably in that group with those guys in terms of pass protection. Really, really, really outstanding feat. It's going to be very hard to beat him around his edge. And you really can't, I've never really seen him lose by a bull rush. And so really good player, about as safe as it gets, I think, at that position, and about as consistent as it gets. Allows them to do a lot of different things with their line. They can slide four away from him and let him live on an island, and they do it frequently. And he can handle those types of responsibilities. So very, very good player, and very few weaknesses to his game. In the run game, sometimes he can get out over his skis a bit. Still very effective run blocker, very good in space. Very good at the second level. Their double team stuff has been awesome with him this year. Since they've leaned more on a duo rushing scheme, it's been a better fit for him. And I'll talk about some of the other guys as well. But as they've moved to more man gap principles in their run scheme, it started to fit him better as a player, and the rest of their offensive line better too. If you watch the outside zone stuff early in the season, and they still sprinkle it in, but only two outside zone runs in their last game. They was really difficult for the entire offensive line. You know, you know this, Ken, and I'll say it for the listeners, but for people who watch offensive line play, it is hard to run outside zone really well if you aren't doing it sort of as a group. And so that was the struggle with the Bucs with all of these guys early in the year, is that they didn't have the reps running in an outside zone heavy scheme. And it really has to be your thing if you're going to do it. And so it was a struggle for them early on. It was a struggle for Wirfs, I think, early on to be as dominant. But he's this more of a vertical based rushing attack, I think, seems to fit his skill set and the rest of the offensive line skill set much better.
So you have the Falcons in there in the same division who run. They run outside zone pretty much all the time. They run all their play action off it. So you can literally write your scorecard: zone block left, naked boot right, almost every play, or a lot of plays anyway, when they're trying to take advantage of that. The Falcons, by the way, they came to Baltimore during the preseason. They ran six boot passes in the first half. And I know terminology is a little different than this, but I'm just talking about, you know, basically it was Heinicke started that game. So it wasn't even any of their regular quarterbacks they're using now. And I asked Harbaugh about it after the game, and he didn't have any recollection of it. It's like they're looking for something completely different. It was kind of strange, but anyway, the point I was making is they ran it six times in one half, and five out of six times, the Ravens weren't on it at all. Meaning the backside edge defender was not running straight at the quarterback, trying to limit the damage from that play. Yeah. Anyway,
that is something the Bucs would try to take advantage of for sure. They will get Baker out of the pocket. A lot of their play action game is to keep him in the pocket, though. That's how they run a lot of it. They keep him in the pocket, but they are a pretty heavy play action team. I think they're up close to 26% now. That's gone up as the season's gone on. They'll tailor that pretty specifically to game plans. But yeah, so I think that could be something that you see show up in this game as well. Back to the offensive line, just getting you left to right on that group. At left guard, you have Ben Bredesen, who's sort of like supposed to, he was supposed to compete with Sua Opeta in the offseason. They were supposed to compete during camp. Opeta got hurt pretty early on in the season, season-ending injury. Bredesen wins that job sort of by default. He's been better as a backup in his career. He started some for the Giants, and it wasn't great. He's been pretty solid in Tampa Bay so far. I mean, he's definitely the weakest link on the offensive line, unless you have a specific type of matchup maybe for rookie Graham Barton at center. But I think that he's probably been the weakest link, but he's played well the last couple of weeks. Again, the change in run scheme and the success they've had there has made life a lot easier for these guys. You're seeing a lot better ball out of all of them. But Bredesen is a guy, I think the biggest limitation for him is just if you get a guy that is quick and can cross his face, he can struggle with that to a degree. And if you, he, because his pad level is higher, somebody like a Travis Jones, for example, I mean, there could be displacement there, I think, with just getting under his pads, forklifting him, moving him aside, and then getting into your rush from that point. So he's not without weakness, but he definitely is an effective player, I think, given what his cost is, which is he's very, very, I mean, he's very cost efficient player. I think he's making near the minimum, but has stepped in adequately as a starter for them.
Ex-Raven, of course, the Ravens had him for a year and traded him to the Giants, but that's good to hear he's doing well. Graham Barton, a guy on everybody's tackle list at the thing, but also the feeling was he would move inside somewhere, probably to center. How's that worked out?
Yeah, it's been okay so far. You know, his athleticism really shows up. He's able to make blocks not a lot of players can make. The biggest thing for him is getting used to playing center. That's actually the bigger than anything. Like, oh, the NFL, the size, the street speed, the strength. Just getting used to playing that position has been a challenge, I think. Snapping and then moving and pass setting in a totally different way. And you're looking for games all the time when you're at center. Mm-hmm. When you're a tackle, you're almost always engaged every single snap. Hardly ever is a tackle uncovered in the NFL. At center, you're uncovered all the time, right? There's not a lot of defenses are rushing, especially with a guy head up on the center all the time. And so because of that, it's a lot of looking for help, assessing protections, assessing blitz schemes, all the diagnostics that go into the position are still a work in progress with him. So he'll get, you know, caught looking the wrong way and get ear holed on a twist and didn't realize it. And he's on the ground. And so you'll have some moments like that with him, but from an athletic and a physical perspective, I think he looks completely fine. Then there are some technical things. The first 1v1 matchup I saw really hurt him was Grady Jarrett's second half against Atlanta. He really, really struggled. But that first half was great. He's had a lot of great sequences on tape. I think he's going to be an awesome player. I would say his ceiling is probably as high as any to be. I mean, he could be center one in 3 years in the league, I think, just from a skill set, from an athleticism upside perspective. But the technique and the mental side of it is what has to still be polished up. So I do think he's arrow pointing up. At right guard, Cody Mauch is probably the biggest arrow pointing up. Last 3 weeks, best 3 weeks of his career. Bucks have run way more counter. He's a very good puller. They didn't pull for a while. It hasn't been a big part of the run scheme. When they have, he is really devastating in that regard. He's been an awesome puller for them. He loves to hit people, sometimes can be a little bit over aggressive and fall off blocks as a result of that. Sometimes he can get a little over aggressive. If he misses with his hands in pass protection, he's in pretty big trouble. Doesn't have the most stopping power and just like in terms of an anchor and things like that when he's in pass pro against bull rushers, but he's a good athlete. If he can stay balanced and just stay technical in his pass sets, he's really capable of a lot of things. In the run game, the double teams they've been moving to, he and Luke Getteke, the right tackle, have been really devastating. They can move people off the ball. They will absolutely maul you. Very physical, nasty duo. Getteke is probably one of the most physical players on the Bucs offensive line. He makes up for what he lacks in terms of athleticism and power with just sheer tenacity and will. His rookie season at left guard is one of the worst seasons for any player that I've seen consistently start throughout their rookie season. He was absolutely dreadful. They move him back to his college position to right tackle, and he was very good last year. And it was shocking because he's probably got the shortest arms of any tackle in the league. So physically, he doesn't really look like a tackle, but he's played at a very high level. Last week was his first game back after missing. I think he missed 4 games with a concussion. So a little bit concerning there, but he played last week, shaking the rust off, I think, but there were still some really good things, especially in the run game. He's one of those guys that brings it. I mean, he is the trash talker. He'll push you after the play. Like, he plays with that edge. kind of going to maximize every physical skill that he has in the NFL and in pass protection as well. So he's been really, really good at right tackle and could be a guy that gets a second contract from Tampa Bay. So those are the five. And if Barton can't go this week, although I think he practiced today, he missed the last game, but I think he practiced today. So if he can go, then I think then he'll play. But Robert Hainsey stepped in for him. He started the last 2 years mainly for the Bucs at center and was actually pretty good. Like, he's a solid starter. It could get to us if they didn't want Barton to learn center so much. It wouldn't surprise me if Barton would play guard and Hainsey would play center, but I think they want him to develop at center so much that they'll continue to play him and Bredesen. But if Bredesen really struggles, I think Hainsey could step in form a guard, or they could move Barton to guard eventually. Those are options for them as the season goes on, because Hainsey is a solid starting caliber player. And if he has to fill in for Barton this year, I doubt you'd see much drop off.
All right. Outstanding. Very thorough and extremely well described. I know fans of my program are usually offensive line fans. They're going to really appreciate that. The wide receiver core, talk us through the various weapons they've got.
Well, Mike Evans, I think people are probably pretty familiar with his game. So I won't belabor talking about his skill set that much, except that he hasn't lost step. I think athletically, still at the peak of his powers. Ball skills are still outstanding. The production people may note is a little bit down this year. Touchdown production is still there. The biggest difference with Evans this year is that his average depth of target continues to go down. He continues to be more of a player who is targeted in the short to intermediate areas of the field rather than just vertically down the field. At the peak of his powers, he was the ultimate vertical threat in the league, basically. And I don't mean that from you had guys like DeSean Jackson and those guys in the league. Those guys were, not volume threats, but like one or two times a game they could cook you. And that was their threat. Evans would just all game catch 20-yard passes. Like, it was, we haven't really seen a guy like that who just dominated in one area of the field to that level, no matter what defenses did. So he's a really unique player in that way. One of the probably more under-discussed things with Evans as his career has gone on is that Mike Evans has become an extremely well-rounded player. As his career has gone on, he's played more in the slot. His route running, in terms of running the full route tree, has become some of the best in the NFL. His footwork at the top of his route, his ability to create separation. You can go and watch the last game, watch him as the number three in the slot, work against man coverage and create separation on an outbreaker. Couple yards of space he's creating on that first drive of the game, working against Paulson Adebo, a good corner for the Saints. And so that's probably the area of his game that he'll never get enough credit for. People still talk about him. And I think people have wised up a little bit, but they still talk about him, Ken. Like, he's a vertical, contested catch, no separation type of player. And if you actually watch the tape, you would see a guy who is really good at the top of the route and separates at a really high level against all types of coverage.
So at the top of the route, he's a good wiggle guy, or is he just a sudden athlete? Like, Zay Flowers is a sudden athlete. Rashad Bateman is a route runner, a guy who sticks his foot in the ground very effectively and waits to do it, sometimes even reading leverage well to get separation. Is he that sort, more that sort, or more the first, where he throws a move without really trying to read the opponent's leverage?
Yeah, no, he is quicker than people probably give him credit for, but he's much more like you would describe Bateman, like where at the top of the route, his footwork is going to open things up for him. He's just a very nuanced, technical player. And I think for a long time coming out of college, if you remember, and then as his career developed, like, you saw, like, the idea with him was this guy just in the vertical plane, running go routes, breaking back to the ball, like, he is going to absolutely kill people. And he did. He still does. He still can kill people that way. But what's just different now is that you can ask him to run any outbreaker, inbreaker. I mean, you can watch first snap of the game. He wins on a slant round against Paulson Adebo from a reduced split. He's near the line of scrimmage near the box and reduced split. Adebo's rolled up on him in press coverage, and it's just jab step in his release and cuts inside and accelerates and wins. And so those types of skills with him have developed a ton, and now you can move him all over the field. Where he was, people have thought about him as this traditional X, tethered to the line of scrimmage type of player. Now you are getting a player that can beat you at all levels of the field and in all dimensions. And so that's to his credit and his work ethic that's continued to be a part of his game that's evolved. I will say this. I don't think he loves contact. He's never going to be contact after the catch. When he goes over the middle, he catches the ball and he gets down. And some of that self-preservation, it probably smart at his age. And it's why he's been able to sustain greatness as long as he has. But he is not like Godwin in that you can hit him 15 times every game square. And at the end of the game, we'll just see who's standing. they're different in terms of that part of their game, but still very effective player at all levels of the field and a real asset to the team, obviously. Godwin is the guy that makes kind of the offense go, and that's been true in the past, sort of just from a snap-to-snap perspective, and it's really true this season. They've kind of leaned all the way back into him. Now, this offense has been awesome under Liam Cohen. I could talk a long time about that, but one of the cool things is how much they've set up for Godwin to get manufactured touches, and I actually wasn't too sure that would be really successful just because coming into the year, I wondered, is Godwin the same player as he was a couple years ago when this was kind of how he was used that first year, I think, that Brady was there? Like, could he do that stuff again? Does he have that explosiveness back? And they've just done a wonderful job with him, and he has been, I think he is, that last I looked, at least he was number one in the league in yards after catch. So he's definitely up there at least. And I think this past week probably only added to that because he broke like three tackles for a touchdown. But his ability to catch the ball underneath short intermediate areas of the field, chain mover, always finds holes in the zone, always slips away from man coverage. He's probably just one of the hardest guys to cover in the league because of just how technically sound and how smart he is, and then he never drops anything. And so when you combine all those things, you get just one of the surest chain-moving, drive-sustaining players in the league.
So you got zero drops, which is obviously that helps a lot, but he's a 10-yard per target player, which is just extraordinary, unusual in the NFL. There are very few of them. The players that get it are among the best players in the league, or they're real low target guys who happen to get there over, you know, 30, 35 targets in a single year. Godwin is, you know, a high volume guy. And am I hearing that there's a fair amount of gadgetry still in that? You said a lot of short and intermediate catches. Are there a lot of slants? Are there some catches even behind the line of scrimmage?
There are some catches behind the line of scrimmage for sure. He's the big screen guy for them. That's some way that they've used him pretty heavily, honestly, during his entire time in Tampa, especially the time that I started covering the team, Brady's first year. He was a guy that they used pretty heavily in the screen game. This year, I'm trying to see how many screen receptions he has, but he's got a handful of those as well this year. Yeah, his average depth of target this year is probably, I think it's as low as it's ever been in his career. And so he is getting, in general, this Bucs offense has become like pretty close to the line of scrimmage. They're going to get the ball out quickly, make throws that way. And it's probably for the best. They've leaned against Baker's like tendencies to throw the ball down the field like a ton, or to hold the ball for a long time to make those throws down the field. They would still like to throw more down the field. Baker's got to probably open up that part of their offense, but Godwin probably isn't going to be the biggest part of that offense. That'll be some of the other guys they'll talk about in Evans that do that. But I do think they can continue to get Godwin involved more and more down the field. The part is this is working so well that it's like, it's not all Godwin can do, but it is working so well the way they're constructing their offense. And with how many bunch concepts the Bucs use, I think they're sixth in the NFL in the rate of bunches that they run with receivers. It's making it very hard for teams to communicate post-snap who has who at all levels of the field. And so that is helping get Godwin that initial surge of openness kind of off the snap, and then he's maximizing that as he gets into his route. Once players fall behind in a rep against Chris Godwin, he is so savvy enough to keep you in that position, that disadvantage. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been so easy to manufacture offense the way they have. The Bucs have lots of routes down the field. This is a very vertical offense in a lot of ways. But because Godwin has been so dynamic underneath, and they have so many good run after catch options right now with their backs as well, that has been a key way that they've continued to move the ball offensively. And so I think that is a big part of Godwin's game. And then the other guys, they're trying to figure out, I think, who the other receiver is going to be in this group. Sterling Shepard has really kind of stepped up. He wasn't even on the active roster early in the season. They wanted to go with Jalen McMillan, the rookie, and then Trey Palmer is the number four, and other guys potentially filling as the five spot. But as the season kind of going on, the first couple of games, McMillan got banged up, then Trey Palmer got a concussion, Sterling Shepard got elevated. He's come in and been ferocious as a blocker. Now, I'm not saying he's the most effective blocker, but because he's small and he has an injury history, he's an older guy, but he has actually thrown his body into the blocking and into the execution parts of things, can too. The Bucs had a slant flat play that opened up for Ryan Miller that really got them back in the game after that disaster second quarter against the Saints in week six. And one of the keys of that play was Sterling Shepard running his slant route at full speed right into the flat defender's chest. And he wasn't an OPI. He didn't break off his route. He ran his route exactly as he normally would, right into the path of the defender. I think the younger guys messed that up. And so Shepard's ability to do those things opened up Ryan Miller, big run and catch, Bucs score on the possession. They start to settle back in offensively. His ability to open those things up for the rest of the guys, I think, is really big to the offense. I don't think McMillan or Palmer, more so McMillan, but I don't think those guys would have been consistent with the little detail executions. And it's nice to just have a vet that can do those things well.
You mentioned something that really worries me now relative to the Ravens here. And that is that they, some, first of all, bunch formations are a fairly large percentage of the concepts they run, and that they like to run picks, which I guess everybody runs picks and rubs off bench. But this was something that really burned the Ravens in week one, particularly from Patrick Mahomes. Is this something that they're constantly trying to do, or is it something that, yeah, they run pick plays, but they're not necessarily, it's not necessarily Baker's thing to pick off the one player from that who's going to be open because of it. Are they putting three receivers together to get one open each time specifically?
Especially in the red area, yeah, which again is pretty common, but the Bucs have utilized that in the red area for sure. They will test your communication as a secondary, no doubt about it. Liam Cohen is all about motion. He uses a lot of motion, but very purposeful motion. If he doesn't think it'll accomplish anything tailored to a specific game plan, he will not use very much of it. Again, play action, same thing. They've used a ton of it in certain games, less of it in other games. They really go based off what they see from an opponent, their tendencies, their tape, and then they adjust things to that. So you will see bunches a lot. You will see lots of motion. You will see lots of play action. Those things all can be part of their offense. They have gone into games and used 6, 7, 8 snaps of pony personnel with two running backs on the field. Yep. And run some trick plays. They've gone this last game only one like that. They did a double pass flea flicker type of thing. And so they will have those things in there. He will have a couple plays every game that are trick plays and he wants to try and hit. Like every single game, he'll have something unique. He put Jalen McMillan in the backfield next to Baker Mayfield in like a two back look, a split back look. And he had Jalen McMillan back there and he ran a route from that position. And he's had Godwin as an insert blocker and then release out into a route. And so like there are wrinkles like that that test your communication and awareness as a defense. Pre-snap, are you on your P's and Q's? Do you know where everybody is and who's matching up with who? You'll see a lot of those. And that's part of where I like Sterling Shepard more, because he does the execution, the mental part, a little bit cleaner. McMillan has just kind of struggled, even though he's probably the most talented. Palmer was pretty solid last year, but the full position isn't there yet for him. This year, he played really well in the one game, and then he got hurt. And so we'll see with him as he comes back. I think he'll start to be more of an offense. He should get cleared from a concussion and should play against Baltimore. But I think they're still trying to figure out which of those two guys they can count on. And they just feel like they can count on Shepard a little bit more. And then Ryan Miller's figured in recently. I don't know that he'll play at all if everybody's back healthy, but he's figured in recently and been pretty solid from an execution standpoint. So they feel like they've got a really deep room, probably deepest room that they've had since AB was here probably. And so we'll see if that plays out. It's really a matter of Palmer and McMillan developing and who is able to step up and take on a bigger role first.
Okay. Talk about a little bit about Cade Otton and any other tight ends that are getting a few snaps.
Yeah. Cade Otton's the main guy, really the only, I mean, this team plays from 11 personnel, like as heavily as any team in the league. So three wide receivers, one running back, one tight end. And I think Cade Otton is going to see almost all those snaps. If they do go to 12, it's obvious rush situations late in the game. I think they played 9 snaps of 12 personnel, and like 8 of them were in the fourth quarter against the Saints this past week. And so you're not going to see it too often. Payne Durham will come in as a blocking tight end. Has actually been fine when he's been targeted, but rarely gets targeted. Kokeeft is the third tight end, also a pretty heavy blocker. Cade Otton is the guy. He's going to run most of his routes. Pretty shallow. He's not really much of a vertical threat. He will run the occasional post or the seam bender, and he will make those catches down the field, but a lot of his stuff is quick outs, Baker's hitting him, going to the sideline or slants. Those are kind of the area in the field in which he mostly works. Really has improved as a blocker. He's not a great blocker, but he's really improved. I mean, there's hardly any tight ends that are good blockers, but he's really improved in that regard. He makes them more functional because he's been able to do than they've been in the past. So that's been helpful, I think, to them. But he is really just kind of – he is an underneath guy. He's a chains mover. He's been reliable. He knows how to get open. He works really hard and competes hard. There's nothing special about him athletically or from a ball skills perspective. He's not like a highlight reel guy. He's a solid starting player in the NFL that is nothing special, and he kind of benefits at times from the machine around him and what everybody else is able to do. But I will say he is very tough after the catch. He is not an unbelievable athlete, but – it is way harder to get him on the ground than you'd think it is. He fights for every single yard. So kind of a guy that represents the demeanor of the Bucs, but isn't like the most impressive skill set.
All right. And the running backs had some success. Talk about that, particularly in the last game.
Yeah, awesome room, best room the Bucs have had in a while, probably from a depth perspective. I'm saying that now because I don't think anybody knew Sean Tucker was capable of being NFC Offensive Player of the Week. If you had that on your bingo card, you probably want a lot of money, but he was awesome this past week. Important to note for him, he had a 6.6 yard average yards before contact this past week. So that's a lot. So he's running into some pretty big alleys. I would be shocked if the Bucs have anywhere near the rushing success in week 7 against the Ravens, or probably any other week this year, this season that they had against the Saints in week 6. Some of that was the way that the game unfolded. It dictated a lot of the Saints defensive changes, and the Bucs took advantage of that. Very smart stuff again by Liam Cohen, who's been awesome. Another part of it was that the Saints DBs just didn't want to tackle at all. And so unless that's a consistent theme with other teams, like, I think that there's going to be probably some regression to the mean for Tampa Bay in that regard. But Tucker was if you were asking me which Bucs running back was the best ones, if you could assure me they would be given space to run into, yeah, I might say Tucker, because he's probably the most athletic and probably the fastest of the Bucs runners. He's the biggest of the Bucs runners. His legs are huge. He's kind of AJ Dillon like legs. So that could have a role, but my guess is snap to snap, the guys who are still best from a 3-down perspective, that's certainly Rashad White. He's really capable of doing everything at a high level. Probably one of the smarter running backs in the league. Definitely one of the best pass protecting running backs in the league. Very good catching the football and making people miss at all levels of the field. That's one of the most impressive things about him. Unfortunately, he's just not that elusive or that explosive as a pure rusher. He knows where to run. He's smart. He's all those sorts of things. I will say this, his numbers look way worse than the other guys because he missed this past week with an injury. And before that, they were running a lot of those outside zones. That's not been a great fit for him. He is not a move laterally, put his foot on the ground, vertical acceleration back at all. When you ask him to run within gap and power concepts and get more vertical from the handoff, way more effective player. Early in the season, he was getting almost all the zone runs, and Bucky Irving was getting almost all the gap runs. I had the exact numbers a few weeks ago, but it was a massive split in terms of the difference. So they were just not effective in one scheme at all. And his average yards before contact, he was basically hitting out the line of scrimmage every play, and they were running the gap stuff really well. And Bucky Irving was just going right into that stuff. So I think Rashad White's actually a fine starter in the NFL. You are just going to miss out on like the explosive traits. Bucky Irving's not crazy explosive, but he is more explosive, and he, I would say, probably has quicker feet laterally than Rashad White does, although White is very savvy if you get him the ball as a receiver. But as a running back in the phone booth areas, I think Bucky Irving showed more ability to make people miss. Nasty stiff arm for both of these guys. You're not going to want to catch that thing for sure. And Irving's tough for a small back. He's done a lot of their goal line stuff, and I think he just, again, that – people think sometimes it's size at the goal line. I think more than anything, it's can you get into these small creases? And Buggy's small, and he gets it vertical.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium, 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Gets into the small creases. And so both those guys can play. All three of them can catch the football. Those are really big things. The best pass protector is White. Irving has stepped into that, I think, better than people think this season. He's still smaller. There's going to lose some battles as a result of that. And then Tucker's pretty unproven in that area, but he caught the ball really well this past week. So he's going to get more opportunities.
Okay, we've gone a little long on the offense here, but I did want to ask you. No. That's great, John. It's great, compact information. People are going to love this. So the Ravens have had, obviously, the significant weakness at inside linebacker trying to cover people that showed up against Mahomes more than anybody. But it's shown up at other times as well. In week three, they went to a dime look on all passing downs. And now they've become one of the heaviest dime teams in the entire NFL and one of the heaviest in Ravens history. Play Kyle Hamilton a lot, I would assume, this week. And based on all the pick and rub concepts you're describing here, I think it would be a big mistake not to go back to a weak side linebacker there instead. But do you think that changes how Mayfield wants to set up or how they want to run the offense, having Hamilton in the middle of the field there as opposed to at slot corner, where he really controls the line of scrimmage very effectively on the strong side of the field?
Yeah, I mean, knowing where Kyle Hamilton is probably one of the first things in the meeting room for the Bucs this week, I would imagine. Like, knowing where he is before the snap, being able to assess because he can do so many different things at a high level. So knowing where he is and where he's moving post-snap, I think those are really important elements of what they'll do from an attack perspective, for sure. I really am curious to see, because he's such a unique player, you know, what they do in those situations, if there is anything that changes from that regard. My guess is they're going to continue to try to run their offense. As I've said, their offense has been very tailored, kind of the opposite of their defense. Their offense has been very tailored to opponent each week and to what they think the matchup will present. So I think they'll continue to do that and be tailored to opponent. One of the things that's worked best for the Bucs is being a heavy neutral pass situation, or heavy pass team in neutral situations. So when that win percentage is basically between 25 and 75% and it's first or second down, and we're excluding 2 minute situations, end of half, end of game, like those situations, the Bucs have been very pass heavy on early downs. That has really made them an unpredictable team. If you go back to the Brady teams under Byron Leftwich, they were super run heavy on those downs. And so teams just killed them on first down. They couldn't get into and they were still good because of Brady, but his job was so much harder than a Mayfield's job is now because of some of their offensive tendencies were so broken. Now Liam Cohen's team's much more on their heels. So that may change what the Ravens are able to do with Kyle Hamilton, because what every defense wants to do is get into an advantageous third down situation and then have fun with your best players, move them around, confuse teams, create turnovers, create sacks, create pressure. So that is a big probably part of the Hamilton plan. And so the Bucs being able to stay out of those situations and be in more like, oh, we're getting our explosives on first down. Now it's first again. You know what I mean? And I think that's going to be one of the keys for Tampa Bay, is just using the down and distance to their advantage to be able to take Hamilton. You're not going to take somebody like that out of the game, but to keep him out of the settings, the ways in which he may be used best.
Okay. All right, fair, effective. Let's move over the defensive side of the ball. First thing I always like to ask is, what's their common look in passing down situations? What do they present to an offense?
Yeah, still very heavy cover three, as it always has been under Todd Bowles. Near the bottom of the league in man coverage, pretty typical of Bowles as well. A little bit more in this past game. The Saints receivers, I think, once Olave was out and Shahid was out, they both got knocked out of the game. They were like, oh, let's just match up with these guys one-on-one, and they won't be able to throw the ball at all. And so I think you'll see very heavy cover three, a little more quarters this season than in the past. They've gone that way a little bit more. I think they're actually out of the five-man fronts. They're down. I forget what the percentages are. A couple percentage points this year. If listeners don't know, the Bucs have been one of the heaviest teams to stay in base, stay with five down defenders, no matter what other teams are running. Now, obviously, everybody's adjusted that over the years, but they have still stayed more heavily that way than other teams have, even if everybody's gone to
five down, even on third down.
Yeah, so it's not always on third down, obviously, like third and long situation, but they would stay in there longer than other teams would be tendency to stay in mm-hmm. there, I would say, okay. Where they've got five defensive linemen down and it's like second and eight. It's like, oh, this is probably a pass, you know, like, and they're still going to go for it. And just in case you run, we're going to shut it down. It's kind of their mentality. Todd Bowles' defense is about stopping the run and eliminating big passing plays over the top. He does not want to get beat deep. Welcome to Antoine Winfield, and that's his role. He's not want to get beat deep down the field. He plays a ton of cover three and quarters to keep that from happening, and he does not want to get gashed against the run. He thinks if he can stop those two things, because he is one of the blitz heavier defensive coordinators, defensive minds in the league, he thinks that eventually they can get you in a sack, a pressure play where you waste a down, or a turnover in one of those situations, or you bog down in the red zone, can't convert, and you're not going to beat us just with field goals. He is very classic Ben, don't break. Like, they will give up yards underneath. They're heavy cover three quarters team. They're trying to take away the deep portions of the field, and they're trying to get pressure with the blitzes that they send. They are going to give you receptions underneath. Hopefully they can tackle the catch. Their athleticism, I think, has been, especially at the linebacker position, is a definite question mark. Lavonte David's still pretty solid, but he's not the athlete he used to be. KJ Britt is probably the worst athlete at linebacker in the league. Servisia Dennis was playing for them on passing downs at the linebacker spot, and he is much better athlete, can cover ground. I don't know if he's going to be helpful to them long-term or not, but he is actually out with a shoulder injury, so he's not available to them. So they're trying to figure out what they're going to do in those long down and distance situations when that position group underneath gets targeted some. But I would say that overall as a whole, like, this team is going to give you those catches more often than not. They're going to give you those easy targets underneath, but it's just going to be about, you can't beat us in the red zone. You can't beat us over our heads. And eventually we're going to force you into a mistake and you're not going to be able to run the football. That is the philosophy behind a Bulls defense.
All right, so let's talk about the line of scrimmage for starters, because looking at the PFF grades for starters, and there's not always a lot of good statistical information available, of course, as you know, on interior defensive linemen. It does not present as an impressive group, even with Vita Vea there, who we certainly seen making plays in the past. Talk about them across.
Well, I do a podcast for PFF, so I can't speak too disparagingly about their grades, and I think it's a great system. You know, I think in general, like, it's a helpful system. It's just, the Bucs are probably one, if you look year after year, the Bucs are one of the lowest graded run defense teams. If you look for PFF, you can look at their grades, like, meaning just an average of their players that play on their defensive fronts grades end up being one of the lowest every year. And every year they're one of the best run defenses in the league. So it is one of the great mysteries to me how that continues to happen over and over. This year, no exception. I'm not sure if it's the way they play that throws PFF off and the systems off that they have in place. But there is definitely a disconnect there, because the players they have in their front are certainly better and more capable than what PFF thinks they are.
Okay, so I think I know some of what's going on there. But PFF, I believe, changed their system for grading missed tackles such that they graded more. It became more likely to get missed tackles. But I think they still might be working off a three-year backward-looking rolling average. So if I look across defensive linemen across the league, everybody is like a below-average tackler now. And it doesn't make any sense, because, you know, not everybody can be a below average tackler on the defensive line. I think that may be a case where Tampa's falling into the same trap as other people. Maybe they even have a few more other teams. Maybe they have a few more missed tackles. But there's always things that are funny about PFF grading that some of them I don't agree with, but they are still the best system out there. I have their people on the show all the time. One of the other funny things that shows up all the time is how they give more of the targets between level two and level three to the linebacker instead of the safety. So you have a bunch of things in there that you know, they've
linebackers get killed. Hey, this isn't all of these games. But yeah, it's I think the Bucs defensive line is certainly not without concern. Most of those concerns for me come in the pass game, though. I mean, Vea is obviously the biggest difference maker, space eater. You can't block him 1v1. It's very difficult to block him with two. He also is way quicker this year. I think he's having his best season. He looks the best, I think, that he has in the NFL to me. He lost some weight before the year. Way quicker, conditioning's been up. He's been just a real difference maker on all three downs so far this season. Sometimes he doesn't have a ton of moves as a pass rusher. He is kind of he's going to run through you or he's not going to get there type of guy. And he does run through a lot of people. So he will condense the pocket and squeeze things and make things difficult for a quarterback for sure. Not many guys his size are can move well enough to be effective in that three down role. And so he is sort of a unicorn in that regard. But he has been great for them this season, dominant player in almost every single game this year. And that has made a huge difference because they've been without Kalijah Kancey, who is their more recent first-round pick, until this past game was Kancey's first game back. Immediately their best pass rusher. I think he is the best pass rusher on that defensive line. I don't think that part's particularly close. The last time we saw Kancey was the playoffs when he played against Philadelphia. He was the best player on the field in that game. He was outstanding, gave Landon Dickerson and their interior offensive line, which was very good at the time, tons of fits, was really disruptive throughout the game. High effort player, elite athlete, elite first step, crosses your face, can bull rush to threw Fuaga aside for a sack this past week. So really good, effective pass rusher, not as effective as a run defender. I mean, no surprise. He's the smallest defensive tackle in the league. That was part of the risk you took when you got him. He can get driven out of there by double teams for sure. But he's sneaky. You can't sleep on him either as a run defender because he might get knocked back three reps in a row. And then the next rep he's slipping around you and he's making a tackle for a loss. And that is sort of where he and Logan Hall come, and that's probably where the PFF grades come in. Logan Hall, sort of similar to that, just not as good as Kancey, not as good a pad level as Kancey. But they can both be really good. Like behind the line of scrimmage, they can make plays. If you're firing out of your stance and not careful, they'll catch you slipping and they'll create a negative play. Neither of those guys are big point of the attack, hold their ground type of players, but they play their own way. Golston is still effective and solid for them. Greg Gaines hasn't been great this year. I don't know if we need to get into the depth guys too much. And then on the edges, Yaya Diaby is their best player, second year, really stout, not going to be fooled much, not going to knock that guy off the ball, super long arms. He'll get into your pads. He'll bench press you back, real tough run defender, not amazing in space, but considering he looks like a bodybuilder, more athletic than you probably think he's going to be after the snap, still really a power inside rush guy, not really an edge bender, not a speed to bend a rusher at all, not going to threaten you on your outside hip at all. So you just better be able to anchor against him. He's up there in the NFL in terms of pressures. I don't really agree with the way that those pressures are charted because often the blocker is still between him and the quarterback, but he will squeeze the pocket, no doubt. He will make quarterbacks uncomfortable with his ability to squeeze the pocket. The big thing is he loves to run through people's chests. He has to contain too, and that's going to be a trick against Lamar Jackson. Like, you can't let him out of the pocket, so he can get a little overeager at times and drive that guy back, and it's like, well, you got to peel off at some point and contain the pocket, so he's got to get better at that. Joe Tryon-Shoyinka is probably the other starting edge defender. Anthony Nelson plays. Chris Braswell plays. Capable guys. Braswell's been fine. None of them are great pass rushers. Hopeful for JTS that this year would be a leap as a pass rusher. It has not been. He is just kind of a guy in that regard. Really good athlete. Plays incredibly hard. Just doesn't have any trait that really you hang your hat on as a rusher. His athleticism, you know this, Ken. There's a difference between athleticism in space and pass rush athleticism, like first step, speed up the arc, ability to corner and bend in that small condensed area. He just doesn't really have that. He doesn't have a go-to thing as a pass rusher. So he's really just a competitor and a run and chase guy, cleanups pressures guy. And they didn't pick up his fifth year option, so he probably won't be back next season, probably be playing somewhere else. A good guy to have in the room because Todd Bowles likes to drop edges into coverage a lot, and he's easily the best one on this team at that. Really good in space. But that is about the kind of summation of him. He will slip a gap every once in a while, like the other guys, and make a play beyond the line of scrimmage. And he's gotten much better as a run defender, you know, wing flat defender type of guy. He can be effective in making stops in those areas, and he can bump out to the slot against big slots. If they think you're trying to run a screen, he'll be the guy that disrupts the bunch sometimes in those situations, and you're not going to stock block him. And so he's kind of a chess piece type of player a little bit. But that's pretty much what the defensive line is at this point.
All right, let's move off ball, talk about the linebackers. And you mentioned there are usually five on the line of scrimmage. I assume that means usually one or two off ball.
Yeah, always two off-ball linebackers in this system. That's how they roll. And Levante David, be one of those guys, still really good player. Last couple weeks have been even better than early in the season, where I was like, he's okay. But the biggest limitations for him just show up in coverage right now. Like, he just doesn't cover quite as much area as he used to in zone coverage. When they ask him to cover in man, he actually is still really, really effective. That's probably been the most fun. I don't know how many people watch the Bucs over the years and know how good David has been and the Hall of Fame career that he's had, but his ability in man coverage is probably the most unique thing for him as a player. And it doesn't ask of him a lot these days, but he's just been outstanding in that regard when that's asked of him. And so I think that is the big question for both these guys. Britt is the player that on this team that most needs to be replaced, but they don't have a replacement for him. Last year, he was a box linebacker. He was a come downhill, thump, hit in the trenches, that type of player. But when the ball got outside the tackles, when he was in coverage, he got exposed left and right. It was difficult. This year, none of that's been good, and that's been a real concern. He was a little better this past week, but the first several weeks of the season, didn't do anything in the box, came downhill and missed tackles, didn't take on blockers. The physicality seemed to be gone. He's not in the injury report, so it is a fall from a pretty low position already for him, and there's been some real ugly moments in space and in coverage. And so figuring out a way to play around him is one of the chores for the Bucs this season. I think they need to make a move for a linebacker before the deadline, because he hasn't been good enough. And now Servacia Dennis, who was their third down kind of option, long and late downs player, is hurt and probably won't play a ton this season. And they don't really have another option. JJ Russell has barely played. I don't think they have shown a lot of trust in him at this point. So I would say that's pretty much the summation of the linebacker room. It's still solid because of David, but after that, if he got hurt, it would be the worst in the league.
Now, one thing I'm seeing in the middle is very high missed tackle rates. Even David has a 20% missed tackle rate, but Britt is up close to that. And the other safety I just looked at, and I'm sorry, I missed his name, was over 16%. Yes.
Yeah. Part of that is with David and White, is they're always around the ball, and that's a testimony to them, because the percentage is going to be higher because they're always around the ball. So it's a testimony to them, but also they need to tackle better. David is the play. I mean, you look at David's missed tackle numbers throughout his career. He has been, for a player who's always around the football, the amount of missed tackles, I mean, he has in his career, it's so low. I mean, his missed tackle numbers every year of his career have been so good, and this year they have not been. So some of that could be age, not quite getting there with the same power that you did, the same velocity you did. Was I watched the tape, it could just be a one-off too. You know how these things work with small sample sizes over the course of the season. He may not miss that many more. It may regress back to the mean. That could be the case. Certainly his career sample size tells us that'll be the case. But because he's getting older, I think it is worth noting, like, does he get people on the ground the same way he used to? Is he arriving at the same angles that he used to? There's a lot of nuance to that, but it is something to note that he does definitely need to tackle better this season than he has so far. And Whitehead probably could be added to that. We'll talk about him in a second.
I know you do a lot of draft stuff, well known for all the draft content you produce, but I always try and separate college linebackers into the guys who really drive through the body as tacklers, mm-hmm. and the guys who are more twisters. You know, they take the guy down by letting him kind of run by them and dragging him down that way. Levante David still a drive-through guy, or is he more of a twister at this point in his career?
I think he's sort of always been a combo of the two. I don't think anybody would ever describe him as like a big hitter type of player. Hitting power, I do think, really matters a lot to speak to what you're talking about. Like, I think is one of the reasons they moved on from Carlton Davis, is he would just wait and catch players and try to get them on the ground. David will still approach players and get them to the ground, but I wouldn't say he like is trying to like take somebody's head off when he hits them. That's not the missed tackle issue you're seeing with him for sure. With him, it's just been not being able to get guys on the ground as much as he used to. And so we'll have to watch it and monitor for sure. I mean, he is one of the oldest linebackers, oldest defenders in the entire NFL. The fact that he is able to be as good as he's been for the Bucs at his age is pretty much unheard of at this position. I mean, that is really very rare that that is the case. I think that there are still really good things about his game, but also this scheme asks so much of him. I mean, to play this heavy cover three in a scheme, you know what that asks of your linebackers and this amount of space you need to cover. And the fact that that hasn't been made easier for him exacerbates any concerns you have with the fact that he's getting older. So that combination has made it a sort of a time. And if you watch the Atlanta game, it was like, man, you got to get out of cover three. Like, these guys are getting killed. So if you have a quarterback that can pull it off and attack it, this defense has plenty of exploitable space in it just due to the nature of it and how predictable they are in coverage.
All right, outstanding. Go to the back end. Tell us about the safeties and corners.
Yeah, so Zion McCollum's having an absolute – they play sides with corners, by the way. Jamel Dean, right corner, he's hurt. We'll talk about him in a second. Zion McCollum, left outside cornerback for them. Zion is having an unbelievable season. His rookie year was 3 years ago – or, yeah, three seasons ago. Unplayable, one of the worst defensive backs in the league when he played. It was a nightmare. He didn't even know what he was doing at all. Sam Houston State, fifth-round pick. Bucks traded back into the draft to get him. It was raw as could get, but they loved him, and so they would still put him on the field situationally, and he got killed every time he was on the field. It was just a nightmare. And so the expectations are low going into year two. He goes outside corner. He was playing inside more his rookie year. He goes outside corner, and you're starting to see it. Like, man, he plays hard and physical. Like, he's so aggressive. Everything in the flats he was destroying. He got to start a couple games because of injuries, and he was good. He played the right and the left side, filling in for Dean and Davis at different times. And it was like, okay, like, there's something here for sure. And there were still inconsistencies. There were still mistakes, but you were seeing like an actual NFL corner. And it didn't look like that was in the cards, to be honest with you, Ken, as his rookie year. This year, he's literally playing at like a Pro Bowl level. And so it has been a crazy come up. The best kid you'll ever talk to, loves the game, works his tail off, extremely physical. If you throw the ball in the flat against him, he will run around blocks and he will make tackles. And he's in the tier one for most athletic corners in the league. So he was this raw, big athlete, but that was it. And most of those guys do not develop, as you know. His physicality and his desire to play in that portions of the game have set him apart as that type of a player. So that's the most encouraging thing with him. As I mentioned, this is a zone heavy defense. You are not going to see him in man coverage that often. There's been a couple press man situations. There's been a couple like miscommunications in coverage where he technically gets hit, I think, per PFF, where I think it's more of a system issue than a him issue. But overall in coverage this year, been absolutely dynamic. One of the most impressive things, I think one of the hardest things to do as a corner is a cover three corner, pinching dig routes and knowing when to get out of your pedal as a cover three corner, when it's time for you to be able to pinch those digs because a vertical's taking the safety out and you don't have anything in the middle of the field. So if he's going to throw between the linebackers, Zion's made like four plays like that this season where he's broken up a dig from cover three. I mean, it's really, really impressive some of the stuff that he's been able to do on tape. Just a special, special athlete. And then when you combine that with his mentality and his IQ, really, really good football player. So he's been the panacea for this cornerback room. Jamel Dean has been fine when he's out there. Generally, very, again, he knows what he's doing in run defense. He tackles well because he's big. He doesn't play that hard. And if you watch his body language, sometimes you will wonder if, especially in contrast to Zion, you'll wonder if he's awake out there. And there's some quarters where it's really devastating. Like, he gives up everything in front of him. He doesn't get out of his pedal. He's really lethargic to close on the ball. And then he'll have the opposite for the next quarter. And you're like, man, this guy's one of the best in the league. So he's just a very inconsistent player. And the big concern with him is double moves. Almost every year of his career, he's gotten beat on a couple double moves. This year, he got beat once. So that was Zay Flowers. Definitely would keep Bucks fans up at night. But overall, he is a very well-rounded player when he's engaged because he does defend the run and tackle very, very well. And so that's a helpful aspect of his game. Winfield's back now, one of the best free safeties in the league. Just played his first game of the year, really, this past game. He didn't play much in week one. And was really, really good. That, you know, helps. They didn't throw the ball in his area a whole lot. But the thing you have to watch with Winfield, and we'll see this year, they change it every year. He's played in the slot more other years. And I think he's going to play mostly free safety for this team. But when do they get him into the box and when do they blitz him? That's going to be the key for them. Jordan Whitehead is a great blitzer, great run defender, played awesome when Winfield was out. way more stable at that position than anybody they had last year. They tried to go Ryan Neal route last year, the Seahawks old safety. That didn't work at all. He was a disaster. They brought Roy Whitehead back, instant stability in that regard, really good player. The key with this group is just going to be who makes the turnovers, because Dean has not been that guy. Whitehead's had a few moments, but not been that guy. Winfield started to finally produce turnovers last year. We'll see if he gets back to that. Zion's had a couple this year, but we didn't know about that part of his game before this. There was Mike Edwards years ago was there, and he was a big turnover guy, even though he barely played. So it's really who's going to be that guy who's going to produce splash plays. Tyke Smith is the nickel rookie from Georgia. Already, I think, easily one of the best defensive rookies in the league this season. Tackles the run extremely well. Very physical player. Not an unbelievable athlete. So if he gets in man coverage situations for whatever reason, you can see some exposure there. But probably one of the smartest players in zone coverage. Just very aware of where he's supposed to be. At an interception last week, just blanketing the receiver. Has some pass breakups. The blitzing for him has been really effective. The Bucs took him because they know his football IQ is extremely high. His love for the game. He's not going to make many mistakes. They call him the old vet because he plays like a vet already there. So he's a really, really important piece. And then with Dean probably out this week would be my guess. Sounds like it's going to be a couple weeks for him. With Dean out, I think you will see last game, Tyree Funderburk got in at corner. He is basically, I don't think he'd ever played in the league before that. That was really kind of a mess. I mean, the Saints receiving core was basically non-existent, and he still had a number of bad reps. And so I think that is a bit of a concern moving forward. My guess is with Christian Izzian practicing today, they will play Christian Izzian, who was their nickel last year, played safety in college, played safety when Winfield was out earlier this season. My guess is he'll bump to outside corner and he'll be the other outside corner. Small, too small to play outside corner full-time in the NFL. That's probably not a big concern against the Ravens unless they hunt that matchup for whatever reason. But absolute competitor, dog at him, you know, undrafted guy who made his way into a starting role week one of his rookie year. And yeah, the Bucs didn't have a million options at nickel, but he plays like that, very physical, but he's small. So he's going to miss tackles just by the science of the thing, you know, bigger, faster guys moving toward him. And, you know, he's not been like a huge ball skills guy or anything like that, but just an assignment sound player who can play outside corner, nickel, free safety, strong safety, like he can do all those kinds of things. There's just going to be limitations because of how big he is. And so that's probably the secondary group you can expect to see out there this week.
So a fantastic description of the defense, by the way. Knowing what you do about the Ravens offense and how they generally have approached other teams, and I thought they played probably their best game of the season this last week against the Commanders offensively, not because they did everything right, but because they took everything that was given to them after the first quarter. Just Washington came up and tried to stop the run. Well, they threw into these man coverage responsibilities and did a better job than Jackson's ever done before. It's obviously misdirection is a big component of the game. What are you expecting in terms of anything maybe nuanced or different from what the Bucs usually do in terms of approaching defensive of Jackson, Henry, and the outside receivers in particular?
Well, the biggest thing is going to be just the run game and how the linebackers are threatened by that, I think, specifically with the zone read stuff. I mean, the Dallas game was probably should be a huge warning sign to Tampa Bay. Like, hey, they question your linebackers. They're going to come attack them. They're going to ask the linebackers to scrape. If they're going to pinch the DN down and the DN pinches down, your linebackers better scrape over, and then they better be able to tackle Lamar Jackson in space. I have serious questions about whether that can happen, especially as it relates to Britt and how fast they make that pull. So that the uniqueness of Baltimore being able to attack you in a lot of different ways is going to be, you know, a huge part of this game. If you're Tampa Bay, you want to put that offensive line in pass protection situations. So that means you have to win first and second down. Who wins those situations, I think, is going to go a long way toward who wins the game. Because if you're the Bucs, you're going to want to stop the run, as you always do on first down. That's going to be even more amplified because of who you're playing. And if you're the Ravens, I wonder how much you say, you know, we're going to tendency break a little bit and we're going to throw the ball. The Bucs are almost every year under Todd Bowles one of the most heavily passed against teams in neutral situations, first and second down. That has not changed this year. Continue to be one of the most heavily passed against teams in neutral situations because of the fronts that they play and how predisposed they are to stopping the run. So do the Ravens count that with saying, we're going to go quick game passing attack. We're going to let the ball be in Lamar's hands more because of that. The Bucs are very blitz heavy. They've cooled off a little bit this year compared to where Bowles has been in the past. But if you know Bowles, you know, it's just a matter of time. He can't help himself. And so when that happens, Are the Ravens able to pick it up is probably honestly a smaller part of it than it is with other teams. I mean, obviously it matters, but like Lamar is going to make you right even when you're wrong up front. The real question is like, what do the Bucs give up behind it? You know, if the Ravens go screen heavy and they try to get the ball to Zay Jones quickly and you've got numbers in the pass rush, can you get that guy on the ground still? Do you have the athletes to do that? And can you get the guy on the ground before they've created an explosive? And so those are sort of some of the things I think about with Baltimore. They just present so many challenges on early downs because there's a lot of different stuff they can do. I think if you can get them into third down and in disadvantageous situations, I feel okay about it as long as you can contain the pocket, you know, as okay as you do against anything that might be the best offense in the league. But that's going to be the key, I think, is just like, if you don't win early downs, you really don't have a chance against Baltimore.
Okay. All right. Now, we don't do score predictions on this show, but I always like to ask, give us one player on each side of the ball you think matches up particularly well against the Ravens.
Oh, man. Particularly well. So somebody that matches up well for the Bucs against Baltimore.
For the Bucs against the Ravens. Yes.
Yeah. I am very interested to see Zion McCollum in this game. I've obviously talked him up a lot in this contest, and we will see. I mean, because they play zone coverage and you know, they play sides, he won't follow anyone or anything like that. And I don't know that the Ravens are even, you know, a team that emphasizes one player that you'd want to follow, but I just am very curious. Chase. Yeah, exactly. So I think that the Zion, just his athleticism against some of the guys that gets the ball for the Ravens, like how that matches up, can he be one of the great equalizers? Is he able to take away explosives, that sort of thing? I think defensively, I don't really see, like, the one of the most interesting matchups probably, I should probably actually say this one, is Linderbaum against Vita Vea, especially if the Bucs do play five down and early downs. They're going to be matched up 1v1 potentially a lot more than even Linderbaum's used to. Vea is a very unique player in that he can be like really good, but also if you can get two hats on him, like there's ways to neutralize Vea's, whereas like Aaron Donald, Chris Jones, like you're not gonna. So you just got to get the ball out before they get there. He every year Vita Vea dominates Frank Ragnow, and Frank Ragnow is one of the best centers in the league. Doesn't make any sense. Frank Ragnow struggles with guys that are that powerful, and that's just it. Frank Ragnow will dominate everybody else, but he can't hand block Vita Vea. And I wonder if it's a similar situation with Linderbaum.
Yeah, you don't have to wonder. It is. Linderbaum, and particularly his rookie year, had a tremendous amount of difficulty with larger players. He's probably gotten a little bit better, but that's still his kryptonite.
Yeah, that's the one I'd say. And then the other side of the ball, you know, how they match up is, I mean, everybody's going to talk. I think on all the national shows, they'll talk about Kyle Hamilton and Chris Godwin and that chess match and everything like that. And maybe it comes to that. You know, I'm not convinced that they'll be like matched up every rep. You know, people love to talk about those things. That's not usually how it works out defensively, especially with players who play in the slot. And so I think one of the keys is going to be for just how the interior offensive line for the Bucs handles the Ravens, especially Madubuike and Travis Jones. Those are the two. Like, how could do they handle those two, run and pass, honestly? I think it's going to be critical to this game because Madubuike, I think a little bit of a slow start to the year, coming on strong now. I think he's a really good proven player, and he's a good rusher. Him against Malk, if that is the matchup. Travis Jones against Bredesen, is often as that's the matchup. Who starts at center for the Bucs? How effective and how many mental mistakes they may make throughout the course of a game against Ravens pressure schemes? All those things are things that I'm looking at throughout the game. So I think that interior battle, if the Bucs lose on the edge, then they're really in trouble. But the interior battle will matter a lot to me in terms of who wins that one.
John, one of the best and most informative Know Your Foe shows we've ever had. And we have some great guests on this show, so I'm not taking away from them, but I really appreciate your description. Tell folks where they can find your work, maybe contact you and talk football with you online, or follow you on Twitter.
Yeah, so my work is pretty much all at Audibles and Analytics is my Substack. I do my own company now. I have my own LLC with there, basically. And basically what that is, there's content for Steelers and Bucs fans every single week. But for people who aren't Steelers or Bucs fans that are listening to the show, Ollie Connolly, who's another, probably the most informed football mind, one of the most informed football minds of the planet. I'm blessed to do a podcast with him twice a week, where we break down. We go actually division by division. So we'll pick an aspect of the team. And actually today, on Thursday, we recorded a podcast. And one of our topics on the podcast was Travis Jones. What does he look like this season? Who is his NFL comp? Like, is there a comp, like we see in terms of ceiling? What might be like the trajectory for his career? We watched a lot of tape on him and talked about that.
Who was the comp?
The comp actually for me was BJ Hill. That was a player that I compared him to a lot. Like, I think they could be pretty similar types of players. My big disclaimer was that Jones, I think, is stronger than Hill. And how far that gets you in the league where everybody's pretty strong, we'll see. But pretty big issue in the last game they played. And so we'll see if that continues. But he's a powerful dude. But I think he's like that sort of a player where, like, you could be a three down player, probably not ever a great rusher, but a really good run defender. And just a pesky guy. Like, you might never see him like, oh, he doesn't beat guys in like a second as a rusher, but he's going to continually condense the pocket. He's going to make life tough. He's going to take away escape outlets for quarterbacks, like that really effective, clear starter type of player, even if he's never a special player.
I'm just going to say right now, Travis Jones, as much as the Ravens are still rushing the passer effectively this year, over 3 sacks a game after a big year last year. But Travis Jones really drives the pass rush. I mean, his taking double teams is what allows Matabike to get these consistent one-on-ones. Those two are always paired together now. So yeah. Travis Jones snaps are always with Matabike. I'm thrilled with the player he's become, and he's the Ravens' probably biggest signing priority this offseason, and they have a lot of guys coming out of their third year that they'd like to sign early.
Yeah, those year three breakouts. I mean, it's always a nice surprise when that happens. And so anyway, we talked about him on the podcast, but that's kind of what we do for each team. We take an aspect of the team. We talked about the Chargers run defense. We'll talk about what the Bengals are doing, not paying their three best players on their team, you know, other than Burrow. And so we'll talk about those things each week on the show. We'll go AFC 1 week, Tuesday and Thursday. We'll split the teams in the AFC up between those 2 days. Then we'll do NFC the next week. We're not a game preview show. We're not a game recap show. We will talk about most recent games at times, but we focus on aspects of the teams, coaching, scheme, players, all of those things that we like to emphasize. And we produce a pretty, I think, in-depth product as a result of that, but it's not, and hopefully more evergreen as a product of that too. So that's kind of our focus. And then I do some NFL content and lots of draft work over at my Substack, Audibles and Analytics as well. It's like $50 for the year to subscribe, or like $5 a month if you just want to go monthly. There's free trials if you want to check it out and see if it's something for you. Every week I produce a column like with all my notes on like 10 to 15 rookies around the league. I just watch tape on. I'm just trying to keep people updated on how rookies are doing around the league, because everybody's hyped before the season and then nobody talks about them unless they're like an elite one after the season starts, because we're focused on all the big names. And so I try to watch those guys and get tape out there. And then Trevor Sikkema and I do a rookie review show every week for Pro Football Focus on their Pro Football Focus NFL channel on YouTube and Spotify and all the different places you listen to your podcasts. And each week we talk, that show comes out Wednesday mornings, and we talk about something related to rookies around the league and how they're performing. It kind of in line with what my column is, but we talk something about rookies around the league. We're going to be doing top five rookie classes at the midseason point and bottom five rookie classes at the midseason point here coming up soon. So those are really the main places to check out my work: Audibles and Analytics Substack. I do a bunch of pods and writings on there. And then Trevor and I's PFF show.
All right. Outstanding, John. And that sounds like a lot of very worthwhile content. It sounds like you're an extremely busy man producing that much.
Other books out there. Job too, so.
You do, really?
You don't do this
full time? What do you do for a living?
I live in the mountains of Western Pennsylvania, and I work as an assistant director at a summer sports camp. So in the summer, I'm very busy and I don't produce hardly any content, and I pause all the billing to my Substack. But after the summer, I have rhythms and times where I'm busy throughout after the summer, but I have a little more flexibility. So it allows me to do this too, which is pretty awesome.
Well, very cool. Very cool. Other folks out there, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. If you're interested in being on a short, I'm always interested in interesting new content. And please hit me up with questions at hashtag film study mailbag. John, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much for having me. This was awesome.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.